Welcome to the NBA Coast to Coast podcast brought to you by thelines.com. Coming to you from the West Coast, Josh Lander, joined by Nate Weitzer. He's on the East Coast. And we roll along here with Wednesday's NBA playoff slate. Two games to look at between the Eastern Conference. One, the Celtics and the Heat there. Got the Pellies and the Thunder as well. We're bringing you best bets in this video and also have player props up in a separate episode. And we're bringing you those each and every day now moving forward through this postseason. So make sure to subscribe to that page and continue to follow along. Also head to thelines.com and use everything that we're putting up on the site these days to help you with all these bets you're making this postseason. Nate, let's go ahead and jump right into your first best bet from that Pels and Thunder game.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Pelicans again here at +7.5. I mean, the +8 obviously hit in spades in game one. And I don't know if I'm just feeling a bit bullish because the numbers indicated to me that it would happen. But I mean, I don't see anything to indicate that this won't be another close game, that this won't be like a rock fight throughout the series, that it's actually very evenly matched. I mean, which we know with the Western Conference 1-8, it always, everything's going to just be about matchups. It's not like, oh, the Thunder's the one seed, they're unstoppable. In any case, I mean, the game was only played at a 94 pace. And the fourth quarter was only 94 pace. So I'm also throwing out a bet here for fourth quarter under again, 53.5 points under. I mean, the team shot 37% and 41%. In that fourth quarter for a combined 44 points. They only combined actually for 45 points their last regular season meeting in late March. And SGA, as we highlighted, has the lowest effective field goal percentage against the Pelicans than any Western Conference team this year. He, in the fourth quarter in the last three seasons, only averages 7 points on 36% shooting against Herb Jones and company. And so this is part of my cap for the Pelicans, though, is that, I mean, SGA can't be completely superhuman against this team. J-Dub does a good job offsetting, but that there's going to be positive regression for the Pelicans tandem here. B.I. and CJ also struggled against that physical defense of the Thunder. They shot only 36% in game one. Can't possibly be that bad again, first of all. But I mean, if you say they don't have as good of a tandem, but they have a better supporting cast, they have more depth. This is the Pelicans' depth has been something to highlight since Zion went down. We all love Trey Murphy. We saw what Jonas did to Chet, just absolutely crushed him, and how that kind of tilted the Thunder defense, allowing the Pelicans to get 15 corner threes. That highly valued shot only hit one of 4-15 on corner threes. That's going to come home. I mean, otherwise, like, who is OKC getting to help this tandem? Josh Giddey benched with a 46 offensive rating. Chet only 91 offensive rating, not necessarily able to make the Pels pay for playing JoVal on defense. Like, he was just all right offensively, and then they mix it in with Nance. And, I mean, down the stretch, like, fourth quarter here stuff, I mean, Nola limits free throws on the road. Both are top five limiting three-point attempts. In the fourth quarter, Nola was so much better in the clutch on the road than at home. They had a +50 net on the road versus -32 at home down the stretch here in the post All-Star break. They only played at a 92 pace in those situations. OKC's offense, not great, 27th in assist to turnover ratio, but at home in the fourth quarter, number one three-point defense, number five field goal defense, and suddenly their rebounding rate jumps up to elite. When it's just like not great for the rest of the game. But in the fourth quarter, they finish possessions, they get stops. I think both teams will continue to get stops and just play really good defense in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I think they'll both play really good defense the whole game. To be honest with you, I still think under for the whole game is the play here rather than over. I'm not going to necessarily take a side in this one, but I am going to talk about one of these game leader props that you can get on DraftKings here. And I'm going to start with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to be the assist leader in the game. I just don't think that at +320 on DraftKings, I like that juice. And, you know, obviously you can temper your units here. It's a nice 3-1 on your money bet. So you don't have to go like a full unit on it. I think a half a unit play is still about where I would cap this. But at the same time, like I'm going to sprinkle on this situation where this dude has had a game this year against the Pellies with 16 potential assists and 8 dimes and led this the game in passing twice. In fact, I would have argued that his biggest threat two assists would have been Zion being in there, to be honest, because of the way that he crashes into the lane against this team and then is either triple teamed because Chet certainly cannot handle him one-on-one, or he goes up. And when he got doubled and tripled in the lane, he's got a lot of wide open assists because this Thunder team is pretty bad at limiting spot up shooters. But that would have been the biggest threat to me in this situation. Now CJ and Brandon Ingram are going to kind of split the duties of assist guys for the Pellies, which does leave Shai, I think, a little bit more open to be the primary, playmaker for the Thunder. Now, like, J-Dub had a few more potential assists in game one. I do think there was a little bit of like SGA trying to force it, whereas they were trying to force the ball out of his hands. And Herb Jones, we know, all world defender as well, is going to continue to be a problem for him. And by the way, Herb Jones would be that guy too that I would say could really help them. You were talking about how bad they were from corner threes, and that's Herb Jones's world. I was correctly predicting that he would shoot like 6 to 7 threes, and he took, I think, 8 of them, only made 2 of them. So like, yeah, there's some positive regression for Herb Jones that could definitely be coming as like a 40% corner three shooter, just to point that out to you as well. But for SGA here, like I said, they forced the ball out of his hands. He had 8 potential assists in game one, but took 24 shots and was only 11 for 24. And a good amount of those were forced, honestly, if you watched it. Like, there was a lot of mid-range forcing. There was a couple threes that I think he just ended up taking because it was like, I'm so tired of going into this defense and the teeth of it. And then just getting held or like having long arms come out of nowhere around me and poke at the ball. And there were a couple of like, I'm just tired and I want to shoot a three threes out there. But I would say that like, if he's watching tape, that would be where he becomes more efficient, is like, yo, take what the defense gives you. And as soon as you see the double coming to you, that means there's going to be somebody open here in a minute. And he had a good amount of secondary assists because I think he was a little bit late in getting rid of the ball when that trap came to him, right? Like, this was a game that I watched beginning to end because it was the best game of the playoffs at the time, for sure, until we had basketball a couple of nights ago. That was insane. But that was the case consistently for him. In the four games he's played, Nola, this year, 47 potential assists. That actually leads the series between them for any team, but that's in part because a couple guys missed a lot the games for the Pellies here that I think maybe would have gotten a few more potentials. But still, 47 leads his team. J-Dub in the three during the regular season, actually four including this last game, has 39 potential assists versus this team this year. I was thinking about making a case for him at like plus 500, J-Dub as well, to potentially do it, because he has had as many potential assists as second to SGA, but as many as anybody on the Pellies as well in the regular season series. But at the same time, like, I can just see Shai being a little bit more aggressive with his passing, if you will, rather than like trying to get to his shot every single time. And like I said, in the regular season, two of the three that he played in, he was the leading assist getter. So I'm going to just take him at a really nice 3-1 here with a little sprinkle to lead this game in assists.
Yeah, to your point, I mean, SGA shot 33% on drives and only passed out of the drive thrice. Not really understanding, he's been in the playoffs before, but he hasn't been the man in the playoffs, which he clearly is. And the Pelicans are clearly going to make other people beat them, and they're going to throw all sorts of help at SGA, get him off his spots, and he's going to have to be more of a playmaker. I think, CJ is probably the guy you worry about in terms of out-assisting him, just having a better game here. But the Pelicans are so balanced. Like, this is what I'm talking about. I love their depth. I love their balance. I think CJ and BI could both have 5-6 assists, but then they're just not going to have the ball in their hands quite as much as SGA, who is a heliocentric player. So Miami at Boston, I will take a pick in this game. I know everybody just kind of wants to gloss over it with the plus 15, but I'm going to go Heat plus 8.5 first half. Maybe Boston pulls away and buries them. Like, I don't really want to mess with the spread in a fourth quarter that could be out of hand, because as we saw, the Heat like came furiously back and almost backdoored covered despite being down 30 in game one. So some wonky stuff could happen there. But what I do trust is Eric Spoelstra to throw his mojo out there, probably some junk zones, probably some weird defensive schemes that keep Miami in this game initially. Also, some negative regression shooting the ball for Boston. They go 22 for 49 from deep. Just absurd three-point shooting. The Heat, I mean, on short rest, really struggled to limit threes. In fact, they played Boston thrice. They gave up 55% from deep in one of those games. That was a back-to-back, unsurprisingly. It was 41% the other two. And in the other two, they're only down 5-4 at the half. And you look on 2 days rest this year, they hold opponents under 35% from deep. They allow four fewer attempts from deep. They're actually 12-4 on 2 days rest two or more days rest. So they definitely are more competitive in that situation. I know they don't have Jimmy, but they do have Spo. They have Bam, they have Spo, they have guys who are just going to, you know, play a little bit of better defense here. And you look in the playoffs last year, I mean, they also got kind of smoked in game one by Boston, lost by 9 in the first half, won the next two first halves by 4 and 15. That's the Spoelstra adjustments, even against Denver, where they were out of gas and just clearly outclassed and had no chance in the series. They only lost games 2, 3, 4 by 6, 5, and 4 points in the first half, and actually won the first half in game 5 before Denver did their thing, you know, running away down the stretch. So I think that that's really relevant stuff. Like game one, Spoelstra is kind of getting his feet wet, understanding what they need to do, what they need to adjust, and what dials he needs to turn. And I think at least in the first half of this game, he will be able to push some buttons to keep his team close.
Yeah, fully concur with that as well. I would be a bit terrified to take the full game for the Heat to cover, just because if Boston starts raining threes at any particular juncture for a stretch of time, then yeah, that would be terrifying. But that's the thing with Boston in the playoffs, man. To me, like, I mean, I'm not going to get into it. I don't want to have an argument right now about Boston. But that's the thing about Boston, is just like there's the variance, and I think in this one, like, Spo has got one game under his belt to game plan for this, and yeah, Spo over Joe Mazzulla is really a reason that, like, you would even consider the Heat as a potential, like, underdog that could pull this game off. Although in their recent series as well, I mean, they pulled out some stuff, right, when we did not expect it as big underdogs in this type of situation last year too. So I think the first half is a really good play. I think the first quarter is probably also a really good play, but I maybe stick with the first half either way. So I'm gonna close it out with another game leader bet here for this Pelly's game against the Thunder. Just go right back there. I got both my player props in the other video from Boston Miami, so I figured I'd stay on this Pelly's game here in best bets and go with Trey Murphy to lead the game in three-pointers made in this one. And it's between he and CJ. Like, let's call it what it is. I mean, they're going to be continue taking the amount of shots that they take when either Zion or BI is not on the floor, and then their three-pointers just they tend to go up, obviously. And they both put CJ took two fewer in this last game, and Trey Murphy went 5 for 12. And I think that's going to continue to be the case. The main reason I like Trey to get the threes at it's plus 260 on DraftKings. And you can just see the game leaders tab, by the way. It's like it's its own tab on DraftKings called game leaders. And the three-pointers for Trey, the reason I do like him mostly over CJ, I suppose the other, you know, if Isaiah, it's like there's nobody on the Thunder that I'm worried about. It would really be someone who was coming off the bench that just randomly got hot, like a random 7 3-point game for Isaiah Joe, which we've seen a couple times, but not sure the volume will be there for Isaiah Joe. So I'm going to go with someone I know is going to take at least 10 threes in this game. I mean, let's put it this way, at least 8, most likely if he's hitting and gets another 44 minute outing like we got from Trey Murphy last game, where they're relying on him a ton, then yeah, the volume will continue to be there and he'll continue getting the most attempts. And he did, like I said, had a couple more than CJ. The five for 12 for him as a spot up shooter. So he actually took 10 of those 12 from the spot up. And that's what I'm really looking at here, is the Thunder are the fourth worst team in terms of giving up points per game to spot up shooters. And that's what he's doing, is a lot of that catch and shoot, it's still spot up when he gets it and takes one dribble, right? Cause he's standing there waiting for the ball. So that's the difference between the catch and shoot and the spot up. And he's good off the dribble from the three as well. So I don't want to make it seem like he's just this catch and shoot guy. He pulled some really big threes out of his butt in that game that went in big moments when they needed him too. So I think he's really just sort of shown that he deserves the playing time. I'm sure you were listening to Zach Lowe, your boy, who was talking about how there has to be a place for Trey Murphy and Herb Jones to start on this team next season. Like, he's like, I don't know who you have to kick off this lineup or trade. He kind of intimated it should be BI, but let's not get into that drama. We'll just keep it to the idea that, like, between the defense of Trey Murphy and then the shot making as well, like, yeah, he's got to be out there. And so I think if you look at him at like 38 minutes, right, I think that would be his floor at this point without Zion Williamson in there. And in the 13 games that rather this year that he played at least 38 minutes, he went over this number in 8 of them, right? So 8 of 13, in terms of his 3.5-point prop, I should be very clear, which I think 4 to 5 threes should do it, right? Like, unless obviously if CJ goes bonkers and bananas, then that's fine. But we saw CJ get the ball taken out of his hands as well. Like, I do think there's probably a little bit of positive regression, the point that you made about CJ and BI being a little bit better on offense in terms of you know, maybe not scoring because CJ had 20. And I mean, I don't think this game is going to turn into like a 220, 230 point game anytime soon. I don't think that's what this series is meant for. It's two teams that play very good defense on jump shooters as well. So yeah, I think for Trey, like one, he can shoot the furthest. If you look at a couple of his threes, they were 29 feet and further from there. So like he's a little bit more less vulnerable, let's say, to the style of defense that the Thunder play as opposed to CJ, who's going to have a little bit more matchup problems.
Yeah, I definitely like this one more than the SGA pick at the same odds. I mean, there's just less competition, like you're saying. Like OKC doesn't have volume 3-point shooters. I mean, I guess if Giddey's able to play and the Pelicans are just going to leave him open all night and see if he can make like 4 or 5. But yeah, Trey is the guy who's like, I'm letting it fly if I have a sliver here, and capitalizing on all the attention paid to those two guys, getting plenty of looks in game one here. And the fact that, yeah, like OKC played a bunch of garbage down the stretch, so they gave up a bunch of threes, but it was only 31% opponent shooting at home down the stretch in their last 14 home games. And now they're facing like a legit team, obviously, and a guy who his confidence is sky high, and he knows what he's out there to do on offense. Let it fly.
Yeah, I would say J-Dub might be the biggest threat if he's like the outlet for SGA when he gets doubled up at the top of the key. But yeah, if it's Giddey, then Jesus, I'll put even more on this. If that's the biggest threat to it, for sure. Like if Josh Giddey was standing wide open at the top of the key and Trey Murphy had a hand in his face for 10 shots, I'd probably take Trey Murphy to make more. So, Nate, let's go ahead and run right into your first play a prop here, the real Triple J.
That is Jaime Jaquez Jr., yes, who is now, you know, maybe one of the top offensive options for the Heat out of necessity. So we'll go over 19.5 points and rebounds at -110. As we know, no Jimmy, maybe for the rest of the playoffs. They pretty much have that understood now. Terry Rozier, I don't think he's coming back for game two here. And we just see the biggest uptick without Jimmy for Jaquez. I mean, during the season, 15.5 points, 4.5 boards, 20% usage, but in game one here without both those guys, 26% usage in his 36 minutes. And it's not like he piled up, you know, points. He only had 2 points in garbage time in the fourth quarter. So he was one of the few guys, you know, being effective against the Celtics defense, which has almost no weaknesses. But he's just like such a smart player, so good at getting his buckets off cuts and knowing when to drive. He did shoot 50% on his 14 drives, making the right plays there. During the season, he shot 67% at the rim, 51% on 3-10 foot range. And those are the only, I mean, the like 5-14 foot range is the only thing Boston was bottom 10 at post All-Star break, pretty much in terms of inside the arc. So like, they're just so good everywhere. You need a guy like Jaquez who can just like find the seams. I mean, even on a per 36 minute basis, whether Jimmy's in there or not, he's averaging 15 and 5. So like this is his usual floor. We saw him step up a little bit on the road without Jimmy down the stretch. And the reason I like the rebounds here, I mean, only 7 rebound chances in game one because the Celtics shot 22-50 from three, and they're going to continue to take at least 40 threes. Like this is what they did during the regular season. There's going to be a lot of threes. The average rebound distance for his 4 boards was 9.5 feet. So he's grabbing those 3-point misses. And I just think natural regression, there's going to be a few more misses here, more opportunities for him in his potential 36 minutes here to grab a few boards.
Yeah, I mean, the problem just for the full game for the Heat is going to be that if they do decide to just completely sell out on the threes, which I don't even know they're going to be able to do with this ball movement from the Celtics and having 5 3-point shooters on the floor all game, that's going to be tough to even to sort of take away that. But if we do see that, I think we'll see a lot more than the 13 free throws that we saw from this Celtics team. So like, yeah, either way for the full game, just saying, even if they manage to limit threes for that team, they're still going to be in a really good spot. But I love the Jaime bet. I was on that with you as well in this game, and don't think they're taking it into account enough. I think they still think it's a rook here who's going to be overwhelmed. But we've seen Jaime Jaquez play like well above rookie status all season. So let me go ahead and talk about everyone's favorite backup point guard, Peyton Pritchard. And honestly, like the thing about Peyton is I'm taking his assist because it's still only, I believe you can still get really bad juice for 2.5. I have no problem taking over 3.5 for like +170 or so is the best place to the best number you can get there for him to get the 4+ assists instead of just 3. And like the thing is like he came in and played actual backup point guard minutes and timing, right? We've seen him in like the end of the season go off against other backups and whatever. But like he came in the end of the first quarter in that I'm the backup point guard sort of time slot. Right. And so I think you're going to continue to see that 24 minutes that he played in game one. I don't know why they would diminish that. They clearly have a ton of trust in him now as a dude that can actually be on the floor and contribute to the offense, even if he's not just running it against a bunch of other backups, which to be fair, he also was doing pretty consistently in this game, playing those backups, but got some minutes in with the starters as well. And my thing for Peyton is like the minutes, right? Obviously it just comes down to like, is there space for him to get his minutes? And when he has, he's gone completely off. He's played 24 minutes this season, 30 different times, and he's gone over 2.5 assists. I'm sorry, he's gone over 3.5 assists actually in 24 of those games. He's gone over 2.5 assists in 29 of those 30 games, right? So this is about as much of a historical lock as you could imagine for a guy when he gets that amount of time anyway, right? Is the 24 minutes is key. And like I said, I think he'll continue to get that. Now, he got 5 dimes in this last game on just 6 potential assists. And half of those came at the rim and half of those were threes, because that's where Boston is shooting from at this point. Like you said, 53 point attempts, making 22 of them. But the thing for Peyton too is like, I wouldn't mind the points, but I do think that when he gets on the floor with other dudes who can shoot, that's when he's a lot more likely to dime up. And he still had a decent game shooting the ball. But once we get up to like needing him to make like 4 shots to get over his prop or anything of that nature, I'm not saying it's not possible. It's just like, I believe in the potential assists and the volume, the ceiling of those being a bit higher than the shots. Because like I said, when he's on the floor with like a Sam Hauser and Luke Kornet's not even gonna be available in this game, you know, when he's on with those dudes, then yeah, there's a little bit more, there's a few more shots available for him. But when it's he out there with like Jaylen Brown at all, which was the case in this last game, Jaylen Brown plays most of the first quarter, Tatum gets that first blow, and then you see Peyton Pritchard on the floor with Jaylen Brown. Well, if you look at the numbers when Peyton Pritchard's on the floor with JB, not very many shots are going up. I mean, it's Jaylen Brown. There's not very many shots for other people. Once he gets into that, I'm the leader of the second unit mode, then he's going up with it. But Peyton Pritchard was still bringing the ball up and at least initiating the offense. And I think that's what you're going to continue to see here is the where his minutes are coming isn't just end of quarter, you're in for a couple minutes because whatever. It's like, no, now he's the dude playing those end of first quarter into the second quarter backup point guard minutes.
Yeah, but he's also the human victory cigar, the human Geno, that who's going to take over in the fourth quarter if this is another laffer. Yeah. And that's why you see him like pile up these nice, well-rounded lines when he gets the full fourth quarter of run. I mean, you should mention it's now minus 160, though, for these 3 assists.
Yeah, it's been that. Yeah, it's been
that. That's that, which is not great. So I think you might want to add the points to just get some reasonable juice here. Because, I mean, he's a bucket, too, like especially if he's playing against the slow Heat backup, the dregs of the Heat bench here, if that's what he gets in the fourth quarter. So I'm gonna go with the popular bet here, Josh Giddey under 20.5 PRA. And I mean, how can you not fade the minutes is really what we're talking about here, especially down the stretch. Like he was benched the final 10 minutes in this game one, just could not play. Kayson Wallace was great. He involved in the game winning stop there, and they got the same amount of minutes, basically 19.5. So even if Giddey is somehow involved in the first half and this is trending over, I think you can live bet, you could double down on the under and just be like, look, he's not going to be in there down the stretch. He actually only averaged 4.5 minutes per game in the fourth quarter, last 6 regular season games. And he averaged 3 total stats, like points, rebounds, and assists in the 5 games that weren't against Charlotte. So like, he just like cannot function against good teams in crunch time. And only 11 touches in the front court in game one, 19 of his touches were just bringing the ball up, it appears, and then passing it off and then going to stand in the corner. And Nola was not giving him open shots like they did in that last regular season meeting where he actually had a good game. They're not giving anybody open shots. There's just elite defense being played here. And both teams are not producing any assists basically in the fourth quarter. Like, they didn't really down the stretch of the regular season either. I mean, because SGA is so ISO heavy and Nola also just the way they're clamping down. I don't know. Maybe you can explain how this works, but he had his 3 assists on only 2 potential assists in game one. So that's obviously not good. He, in this regular season game where he did spike against Nola, he had 7.7 rebounds on 9.3 chances. So that's obviously very lucky bouncing you the ball. But in this play, his first playoff game here, zero contested rebounds and two deferred, and only grabbed three of his seven rebound chances. So I just don't see him like mixing it up there, not you know, piling up stats or being that physical, and certainly not being a main source of offense if he doesn't just get benched again right away.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. There's some discrepancy between NBA tracking data, which is based on like technology that they have on the floor that literally just tracks these players, and like the NBA stats keeper dude who works for the Thunder and was at that game and whatever, right? So sometimes the potential assists like don't equate. That's the best I can that I could find at this point, because the NBA is pretty hush hush about how they gather that tracking data. But yeah, it's going to be pretty interesting once they publicize a little bit more of that, because I'm also a little bit interested to better understand how you can have fewer potential assists than actual assists. And I'm sure there's a logical explanation. I just don't have it right now. So let me close out here. I love the Giddy pick, by the way. I do think he's going to continue to see his minutes dwindle, or at least be limited with this matchup, especially. Like you can't be any kind of liability on defense when you really are focused on taking out dudes like Trey Murphy and Brandon Ingram and all these wing players that like that Giddy's just getting smoked by on defense. So let me close it out here with what apparently is a popular bet in Kevin Love over PR. I was on this in game one as well, by the way. So like, you know, I was here first or whatever, but the thing about K Love is like, I think he would have gotten more minutes in this last game. I was obviously watching intently in that third quarter, cause he needed like one more point and rebound. He had like 10 in the first half. Between the points and the rebounds, and then he needed one in the second half. And when the third quarter, like 4 minute mark came around, he didn't come in the game. I was like, damn it, is he not going to get in there, because this thing is over in the middle of the third quarter? Like they blew it open, right, to like 25 points with that amount of time. And right when the subs were coming in that third quarter, Kevin Love wasn't a part of it. Now he came in after that, but I think he would have come in right then and there if that game wasn't at 25 points for the Celtics. So if we believe in the 8.5 point spread that they can keep this within after the first half, then hopefully they can at least keep it close enough in the third quarter that he comes in this time. But either way, like you need him. I think Spo understands that. He understands that he needs Kevin Love in this matchup, and he's going to have to rely on probably a bit more than he wanted to anyway for these playoffs. So in the three games now that he's played, the first two in the regular season that he played Boston. I mean, and that's the thing, is like, I feel like I get a little bit of double whammy. Like you need Kevin Love because you don't have anybody else to rebound without Jimmy in there anymore, and two, you need Kevin Love against Boston in general. You need a more versatile big who can, at least especially on offense, you know, step out and pull certain guys from the basket, so you don't have one of the best, like, because KP was basically a top five rim protector this season, and you really need to pull him away from the basket when you're on the floor with him. And even Papa Al obviously loves to camp down low and doesn't want to come out to the three-point line, so Kevin Love is crucial for that. That's why he averaged 18 minutes in the first two games of the season versus his team, as opposed to the like 11 minutes that he averaged on the season, right? And so I think he's going to continue to see some of that. I think like 16 minutes is a good benchmark for him for what his minutes should be in this one. And when he's seen even just 12 plus minutes this season, he's played seven games, I guess eight if you include this playoff game, without Jimmy getting 12 or more minutes, and he got 13 in this last one, and he's gone over in now all eight of those when the line is 10.5 for those points and rebounds, right? The rebound chances are decent for him. I mean, enough to get the like five boards that you would need for him to get over his prop. And like I was saying, in the regular season went over versus Boston, still went over in this last one, despite the fact that he averaged way fewer minutes. And he actually averaged 15 points and rebounds now against his team on the season in about 17 minutes per game. So like the volume is going to be 20 minutes max for sure. A lot more likely that he's closer to 15 minutes in this one. But anywhere around there, like, I think he's good to go. If you look at versus Boston last year in the playoffs, that was another moment in time where we know he came over to this team and then he became way more important than anybody realized. And in the playoffs last year, averaged in the 20 games, averaged 18 minutes, 7 points and 13, I'm sorry, and six rebounds or so. And a couple of those were without Jimmy as well. In the five games he played without Jimmy, once again, we're up at about 13, 14 points and rebounds combined. So going to continue to go with him in this context and just believe that Spo's going to get him back out there if this game's a little bit closer.
Sorry. 3, 2, 1. Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, it's just so few minutes that the margin for error is pretty slim here for Kevin Love. Like, and I I mean, Jovic was not very effective defensively either, but I mean, I'm looking at his prop being about the same. And if Nikola Jovic gets many more minutes than Kevin Love, like, I'd rather take almost the same prop for him. I'd rather look at Caleb Martin, 5 rebounds at plus 120. As just like thinking about how Spo's going to approach this is like, we need to get quicker, probably. Like, we need to be like 4 quick dudes, lengthy wings around Bam, and not play a guy like Kevin Love, like more Highsmith, like Love's minutes. Yeah, you're saying like he did this in 17 minutes. It's just scary to me to think like how efficient he has to be on a permanent basis against the Celtics team that while he's out there, like, I don't know, they could just cook him. They could just not miss any shots and not give him any rebounding opportunities. So, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of guys to look at for the Heat, certainly. But I mean, really think about what Spo might do in terms of his rotations when you're picking these ones.
That is what I'm thinking. Caleb Martin was horrific. Yeah. So that is exactly what I'm thinking, is like, nobody looked good for the wings on the Heat. And I think that might be a one option to mix it up a little bit, but also just his tendencies in the situation without Jimmy have been to play him 16 to 18 minutes. It's a bit scary to take somebody's props at 16 to 18 minutes, like you said, but the per minute average stat here for him and pulling down these points and rebounds, he's gone over because of that ability to do that with that amount of time and being such a strong focal point of at least the rebounding and all that. But we'll see how it goes. I don't trust too many guys on that Heat team right now. And I don't think that they're long for this series, similar to how they went to the finals and then followed it up with a sweep at the hands of the Bucks, right? We saw that as well. So anyway, that's all the time we have for you in Play of Props here. Continue to follow along. Also got best bets as well for you guys. So make sure to subscribe to that page and check everything out. We're bringing you the rest of this postseason. Until we see you next, happy betting.